Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome back to MTG Pro Tutor. Sean Penrod here, and this is episode 170 of the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. If this is your first time, welcome, and I highly encourage you to go back and listen to some of the older episodes because we just had some amazing guests on the show, including Reed Duke just last episode, and then some other fantastic guests all the way from the beginning. So check out the back catalog if you are new to the show, and if you've been here for a while, thank you. I so appreciate you tuning in every week and listening twice a week, in fact, where you get the best and brightest magic minds in the world sharing tips and tricks to help you level up your game. So before we dive into today's featured guest, I do want to share a really cool new app that I came across. It's called Snap Cardster. So the vision of Snap Cardster is to become an all-in-one magic app. It's being developed by a young team of magic enthusiasts that's being led by Pierre Reichelson. If you remember back episode 142, he was a featured guest there. And while the app will have many awesome features, the foremost and flagship feature is a magic card scanner that does super fast categorizing. I've been playing around with this app, and it's really cool to be able to scan my collection in literally a snap. That's why I think they called it a Snap Cardster, in addition to the play on the magic card name, of course. So in addition to the super fast cataloging feature, the app is going to include local trading, a magic news timeline, swiping to buy, swiping to sell, and some other cool things that they have cooked up. Now, the open beta for Snap Cardster just launched yesterday, concurrently with their Kickstarter campaign. So right now, Snap Cardster is only on the Android, but they want to further develop the app onto the iOS as well. And for that, they launched a Kickstarter with some really cool perks that you can go check out at snapcardster.com/Kickstarter. But primarily, what they need help with most is building a robust collection of magic card images. They have a really sweet algorithm that already pulls images from several places online, but it's much better for the algorithm that they've developed to have users scan their cards to help build the collection. So if you want to come in on the ground level, be a founding user of this new Magic the Gathering app called Snap Cardster, then go to snapcardster.com/Kickstarter, check out what they have going on over there, and lend them your support so they can get off the ground. Make sure you tell them Sean of the Gathering sent you. Other than that, what's hot in the news is we had two Grand Prix last weekend, Grand Prix Prague and Grand Prix San Jose. I want to give a huge shout out to past guests Paolo Vitor Damodarosa and Christopher Larson, who both made it into the top 8 of Grand Prix Prague. And surprisingly, there was not a single past guest who made it to the top of the Grand Prix in San Jose. However, that just means that there's 8 brand new faces that we're going to be inviting onto the show, and hopefully I can get them all to come on and share their stories. So congrats to everyone who made it. This was, of course, Ether Revolt Limited, because it is the weekend before the Pro Tour, so I'm really excited to talk to them, hopefully sooner rather than later, so we can kind of break into this format as well and learn from them. And then, of course, the Pro Tour is this weekend, which I'm super pumped for. I love the Pro Tours because they always come soon after the release of a new set, and it's always fun to see what the pros do with the new cards. So stay tuned for that, but as of right now, we have a great guest that we're going to bring in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest has been playing Magic since 2009 and has 1 Grand Prix Top 8 and 1 Star City Game Open Top 8 on his record. He's attending his first Pro Tour later this year, which is only 45 minutes away from his house. He loves Cube and Legacy, but mostly plays Standard. Coming to us from Clarksville, Tennessee, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Cody Napier. Cody, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Doing fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yep, I'm ready for it.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Cody, you can do so on the internet, obviously. He's on Twitter at Cody_Napier, and he's also on Facebook. So either one's fine. You can reach out to him, ask him a question, say thanks for being on the show. Cody, we would love to learn a little bit about you outside of Magic before we dive into the Magic stuff. So are you born and raised in Tennessee?
I'm actually born in Hazard, Kentucky, and most of my life I spent in Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Okay, excellent. So what brought you to Tennessee?
It's just like right across the state border, like 20 minutes from where, from Hopkinsville.
Okay. I grew up at. Awesome. Awesome. Now, do you have siblings that you play Magic with, or are you kind of the lone wolf as far as that goes?
Yeah, I'm an only child, so no siblings.
Okay, excellent. Well, we would love to dive into your origin story as far as Magic goes. So take us to the day. Tell us a story of the very first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
It was like right after I got out of high school. I'd been playing Yu-Gi-Oh! A decent bit. Like, not competitively or anything, just for, like, fun. And one of my friends got me to try Magic, And like, so we went and bought a couple packs of Rise of Eldrazi because that just came out. And I opened a Gideon, and he traded me a Jace for it. So really my first card was Jace the Mind Sculptor. So I was off to a good start there. And like after that day, we actually, I built some really bad deck, went and played at FNM, got like 0-5 crushed. And I've been playing like FNMs and stuff pretty like often since then.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So, I mean, you're not the first crossover transplant, I guess, from Yugo to here. So that's pretty neat that that you made it, and now you're over here doing great things and being competitive in the Magic scene.
Yep.
What was your first set again? So when did you come in?
I think Rise of Eldrazi had just came out like, you know, that week or the week before. It was the first week it was legal and standard. It was like the FNM I played.
Rise of the Eldrazi. Now, do you have a favorite set since you've been playing?
I like the Shard block a lot, the Shard Dwellar block, just because... I don't know, that's like when I first started playing, that was still legal. So I remember the Jund and like Jace versus Jund days a lot.
Uh-huh. Excellent. And along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
My favorite card, it's probably a tie between Elvish Visionary and Wildfire.
Excellent. Wow. Choose one of those. Tell us what it is. What does it do? And why do you like it?
My favorite would probably go to Elvish Visionary, which is a one in the green for a 1/1 elf. And when it comes into play, you draw a card. I've liked it a lot because, well, the first deck I ever won an FNM with was Elves during that standard. And like in Legacy, I've played Elves probably more than any other deck. So that's probably why it goes to that card.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, it's just such a solid card, you know, 1/1, but you get to draw that card and it just keeps things going for you. And yeah, I the first modern deck I ever really played was an Elves deck that I borrowed from a friend. And so definitely cast my fair share of Elves Visionaries for sure. So that's pretty cool. So when you started getting into Magic and getting more serious and more competitive about it, what was an early challenge that you had or an aspect of Magic that you were terrible at but that you eventually overcame?
I think the main challenge was thinking too far ahead of myself. Like if I would start off like 2-0 in a tournament, I would think about the end of the tournament instead of thinking every round at a time and focusing more on having fun and just playing Magic than just trying to win.
Interesting. So what did you do to kind of get past that? How did you center your thoughts and keep it focused on this match right now?
Really just focus, just like paying more attention to like what I was doing, not thinking about like if I win this match, then I'm like this much closer. Instead, I was just more focused on like playing them. But like I used to be more focused on like if I go X-2 or like X-1, then I'll be like a good straight for day two when really I should have just been more focused on the first day.
Yeah, very interesting. So that is something that we all strive to do is to keep our focus on this match right here and just kind of don't let the results of the past matches get to us and don't really think about, oh, what's coming down the line. Just focus on this one right here so you can keep the plays tight and keep your mind in the game and whatnot. When would you say was your, I guess, breakthrough as a player that you kind of realized, oh, hey, like I'm pretty good at this Magic thing and I can hang with it?
Really, like, I started playing competitively like probably like a month after I started. I don't know. I've always liked winning really. So I wanted to do the competitive stuff more into it. But the first open I played in like 2 months after I was playing was an open in Nashville, and I cashed that open and I was like, well, maybe I'm actually decent at this game. So I just kind of kept going after that.
That's awesome. So you cashed your first open. That must be keep that momentum going. That'd be a good motivation.
Yeah, like beat a lot of players that were just a lot better in that tournament, so that felt pretty good, so maybe want to get better myself.
Wow, interesting. Now, on your journey, which players do you look up to? Either, pros, past or present, that you admire, and what do you like about them?
Some of the pros-wise I look up to are some of the main ones have been Jerry Thompson, Todd Anderson, and Brian Brandewin. One of my first ever win-ins was against Brian Brandewin, where I lost in a win-in that opened against him. And, like, I've talked to him quite a bit since then, and we're decently good friends, so I look up to those three quite a bit.
Excellent. What did you learn from, one of them in particular?
I learned a lot from BBD, just, like, between deck building or just focusing, like, what matters in the game.
Like what? Like, what does matter in a game?
Really, like, knowing your role, of like, what you are in each matchup. And, like, if you're the aggressive deck, like, knowing that you have to stay, like, in a certain matchup, knowing that you have to stay the aggressive deck. Like, if you're looking to get to control deck, sometimes you have to be more aggressive to try to kill them, even if it can cost you the game by doing it, because if the game goes longer, then you might not win anyway.
Now, when you, especially in Constructed, you kind of have, your deck is built a certain way, and you have an idea of what role you want to take, right? And so, how do you keep your finger on the pulse as the game goes along to know when you should shift? Like, you're playing an aggressive deck, but all of a sudden now you need to go for a little longer, or you're playing a control deck and you realize you need to go be a little more aggressive. How does that, can you give us an example of a time that might have happened, or just expound on knowing your role and when to shift?
Like even in the, like in the Grand Prix against a lot of like the Delver decks I played when I was playing Sneak and Show in the Grand Prix, that was a couple weeks ago. Like they have days, and that card is sometimes like you can wait longer and play around it. But a lot of times it was better to just slam the Show and Tell turn three and just hope they didn't have the days. Cause if you wait too long, you're just going to die to their Delvers or Young Pyromancers. Mm,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. So just kind of going for it. You force them to have it. And if they don't, then you're able to pull it off and go all the way. Oh, excellent. Excellent. Absolutely love it. That's really neat. So all of our journeys in Magic have highs and lows, but those highs and lows are unique to each player. So we would love to dive into two stories. The first one being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience.
Worst Magic moment. Been quite a few of those, mostly from me messing up. But I think the worst one I remember wise, because it was on camera, was against Brian Duin. Where I had a Doomblade in my hand, which is destroy a target non-black creature for 2 mana, and he goes to equip the Sword of Feast and Famine to a creature, which of course Sword of Feast and Famine gives protection from black, and I let it resolve, like the equipped resolve, then realize, oh, I could just kill this guy, and instead he attacks me and I have to discard the Doomblade.
Oh no. Was that an important match, or like why does that stick out to you as one of your worst moments?
That was in the win, and I talked about
it. Oh, okay. Okay.
So yeah. That one sticks in because of that.
Wow. So looking back on it, what did you take away? Like, obviously it's like, oh, hey, I should just do this in response. But like, what did you learn from that moment, from that experience? Like how has that shaped you as a Magic player?
That was a lot of it was, I was just really nervous playing for a top 8 and not really focusing on the match enough. So I needed to focus more about what was going on right then.
Wow. That's crazy. So, on the flip side are our highs and our proud moments. So what has been your proudest Magic moment?
One of my proudest ones, like even recently, was during the Grand Prix against Kyle Boggums, playing for like my winning match for top 8. Two turns earlier, I had set up a Brainstorm to where I had a Grizzlebrand as the last card I put back. Because I had enough counter magic to where there was basically no way my Show and Tell was not going to resolve. So when I Show and Telled, and after the counter war finished, he Vidian clicks me. My last card was my Grizzlebrand. He puts it on the bottom, so I draw the Grizzlebrand that I hit with Brainstorm, so I still put my Grizzlebrand into play.
Excellent. And you had the foresight to kind of plan all that out?
Yeah, because that was the only card that I knew he could have to possibly win at that point. So I thought about playing around it for because of that.
Nice. And so because he played that, then you were able to draw into the Grizzlebrand. Wow. Very good. How did you get to that point? Like, tell us some of the... Yeah, tell us what it's been like to kind of develop that foresight and be able to, you know, make a play like that, because that's pretty darn clever.
Well, that is, I've played a lot of Legacy, and I've lost because of plays like that a lot, so I've learned from losing to them.
Yeah, oftentimes our losses can be more poignant teachers than our wins, for sure. So that's awesome. Very clever. Well done. That's neat. And then you're able to make it into the top 8 of GP Louisville and get your first Pro Tour invite. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about getting to play in the Pro Tour for the first time.
What are you going to do to prepare for it? Like, are you linking up with other Pro Tour qualified people? Or are you lone wolfing it? Like, we're always very interested to hear how first-time Pro Tour attendees plan to go about it.
I have a few friends that have played on a few Pro Tours that live up in Nashville. So I plan on, at least the week before the Pro Tour, I plan on going up there and hanging out and playtesting with them and stuff. I'm trying to prepare. And for the limited portion, I'm probably just going to play Moto a lot, just drafts.
Excellent. Now, outside of Magic, are you working? Are you going to school? Or are you able to kind of just focus all your time on it, and that way it's pretty easy to go and spend a week in Nashville and play Magic?
No, I'm working. I work 4 days a week at a Walmart distribution center.
Okay. But you'll be able to take time to go to Nashville that week?
Yeah, I'm planning on taking at least a week off before.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Awesome. So you're going to be slamming Moto to get the limited portion in and linking it with people to work on the constructed aspect. So, I mean, here we are. Like, this recording is right after the pre-release of Aether Revolt and is going to go live, you know, after the set's out. But, I mean... what has been your experience in making decks with the new set in the past? What are you looking for? What are you hoping for? Like, what are your thoughts on Standard and what Aether Revolt offers?
I'm pretty excited about Standard. Like, not necessarily because of Aether Revolt, even though the set does look pretty sweet. I'm more excited that Emrakul's gone.
Yeah, okay.
but I'm planning on going to Columbus. So I've been testing a little bit already for that. So far, the format seems like it's going to be quite a bit more aggressive than it used to be. And you could also do more mid-range things even now, because you can't, like before, if you played any kind of mid-range dirtily deck, you just lost to Emrakul. Now you know, those decks also have more of a chance.
What have you been playing in Standard in the past?
In the past, I've normally tended to like control decks more, although they haven't been very good for a long time. So I'm planning on testing some of those in the next couple of days to see how they do.
Excellent, excellent. So, oh man, this is going to be so fun. Like you said, just because with the new bannings, we'll like to see what kind of decks, you know, shake out and what strategies are good against those. And it's just going to be a lot of fun. So I wish you the best of luck in exploring this new format and figuring something out for the Pro Tour. That's going to be awesome.
Thank you.
Now, when you are preparing for an event, like say the Grand Prix that just passed, what does that preparation look like? How far in advance do you start? How soon do you pick your deck? And how often are you playing? Like, what are you doing to prepare for, you know, big events?
Normally for big events, like usually depending on like my work schedule and stuff, I usually want to like play test at least a week, just whenever I can against people, just trying everything I can. I'm not really stuck to one style of deck. I used to just only play control decks, and I lost a bunch because I would only play one type of deck. But playing other types of decks has got me a lot better at playing against those types of decks, so I understand them more. So I try to play everything now just to learn more about the different archetypes. But for, like, say for this Grand Prix, I didn't really test at all for it. Lately, all I've been playing is a lot of Commander.
Okay. So how do you pick which deck you're going to take to an event?
Like, a lot of times, I'll use, like, MTG Goldfish and a bunch of just websites like that and look up what's been doing well lately. I'm trying to pick something that's okay against whatever the best decks are at the time. So, like, for this Grand Prix, like, I knew Miracles was probably what I was going to play against the most because it's been the best deck in Legacy for a long time. So I wanted to play something that was good against Miracles, also very good against a bunch of other stuff, and that played Brainstorm because it's Legacy, so I wanted to play Brainstorm.
Very cool, very cool. And so that's is that the same process that you do for a Modern event or a Standard event?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, coming up for Columbus, like right now, I'm actually leaning more towards playing Red Green Pummeler in an unknown field because everyone's going to be playing not quite tuned decks for the most part for the first week. So I'm thinking about just playing Pummeler because you can just kill them while they're still trying to set up, or if their deck's not tuned, they might stall for a turn and you can just kill them.
All right, very cool. Man, yeah, I'm really interested in, yeah, I love Standard. I haven't been able to play much recently because I've been moving and holidays and yada, yada, yada. But yeah, I'm excited to kind of get back into it and just kind of, and so I'm always interested to hear how people choose their deck for upcoming events because, you know, it's a similar process that we can all go through. So kind of seeing what's been doing well recently. You said you use MTG Goldfish, is that right?
Yeah, I use Goldfish and MTG Top 8.
Top 8, yeah, yeah, and just kind of see. And so do you play the best deck or play something to beat the best deck?
Most of the time, I just play the best deck, mm-hmm. Although there has been a few times where I play and just something I think is going to beat the best deck if I expect to only play against that deck for the most part.
Now, as far as card availability goes, you just have a good group of friends that, or do you just, you know, invest in every set so you have everything? Like, how do you go about that? Because, you know, obviously that's one of the sticking points, I guess, one of the bottlenecks for a lot of people who are playing, especially Standard, is that card availability.
Standard, I try to invest in keeping my own cards for Standard, but like I can't always do that. But I do have a pretty good buddy that buys like everything, and he usually will let me borrow whatever I want to use if I'm going to an event.
That's awesome. Yeah, back when I lived in California, I had a friend like that. He'd always get, you know, a couple boxes of every set, pretty much. And so, and me too. I always wanted to build my own deck and have my stuff, but you know, in a pinch, you know, I can always ask him and he'd help out. So that's always nice to have a friend like that. So let's see, as you've played, you know, thousands of games against tons of different people from all over the place and just learned a lot and seen a lot and grown a lot. And we love learning from our mistakes and also other people's mistakes because we know that we can't win every time, but we can learn every time. So in your experience, what has been the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
I think one of the biggest mistakes is people a lot of times will think of Magic more like a job than a game, which is one of the mistakes I used to make a lot. I used to go to tournaments only caring about winning, and it's not really about that. You can have a very successful weekend and do poorly in a tournament, and most of the time if you're not having fun while you're playing, you're not going to do well either. So having fun at going to tournaments more than just trying to win. Like, still I'm going to try to do well, but if I'm usually having fun first, that makes me do better.
That's very interesting. Like, others have said something similar. Why do you think that is? Why do you think when you have, when you approach it with a more, not that you don't care, because obviously you wouldn't be competing if you didn't care, but when you have a more, you're more focused on the game and the fun and just kind of, you know, doing your best as opposed to just winning, you do better. Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of it is even comes from your losses. When you're looking at more, like, when you look at the game more as a game and trying to have fun, when you lose, it doesn't hurt you as bad. You can think more clearly and see, like, learn from your mistakes more instead of just going on tilt from losing.
Very interesting. I think you touched on to something that's really good, because if you're so wrapped up in it, then the losses, you know, hit harder and then you tilt more, and which negatively impacts your future games. That's very true. Very true. Now, Cody, what is something that you have learned from Magic that you've been able to port into other aspects of your life?
A lot of it is that variance is going to happen with everything, even with your life. Like, random stuff is going to happen that's awful. But like with Magic, like, it's also a lot of times random stuff's going to happen that's also good. So I've learned a lot from like that portion of Magic, the variance portion of it, that even if stuff's going on, it's going to end up being bad. And like, it seems like stuff's awful, then it's going to get better most of the time.
Yeah, that variance, it's everywhere, but we seldom get to see it so prominently as in Magic. And so when you're able to learn those lessons in a game and then apply it to your life, then things can kind of be, obviously it doesn't take away the ups and the downs, but at least you have a better understanding of those ups and downs and know that it's not all going to be bad all the time. So that's really cool. Now, kind of moving that lens inward on you, what have you learned about yourself? What's some of the deepest things you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
Learning about myself-wise, it's definitely made me realize how competitive I am about things and how obsessive of a person I am about things. I can't ever do stuff just halfway, which is a lot of the with Magic. Even though I'll play the game like with friends and like I'll play Commander and stuff, but even with like that, when I play, like, me and the group of people I play with Commander with, we play like very hyper competitive Commander decks that are just like trying to combo each other. We're not just having like hour long like fun casual games. It's hard for me to play like any game or do anything hardly casually. Even though I'm still casually doing it as a casual thing to do for fun, I'm still very competitive about everything I do.
Yeah, I hear you. Man, I'd like to be in your group just because I don't like the super long, pointless, casual games of EDH either. Like, I'd much rather...
Yeah, we can do like 5 games in that same time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like I'd much rather just, yeah, play the spells to win and like win. So anyway, that's cool. That's really cool. So how many pro points do you have now, Cody?
Just the 4 from the Grand Prix.
So, I mean, do you have any plans to make a run for maybe silver this season? Like, what are your thoughts? Do you have a couple more Grand Prix lined up?
I don't have plans yet per se for Grand Prix other than Vegas. I'm planning on going to Vegas for those multiple Grand Prix in that week. But main focus right now is I want to do well on the Pro Tour.
Awesome. Very, very awesome. That's really neat. Now, we mentioned up in the bio that you like Cube and Legacy, but you play mostly Standard. So what would you say is your best format?
Best format is probably Legacy. It's the format I've definitely had the most success in. It's very rare that I've even played a Legacy tournament and not at least cashed, but I just understand the format where I've played it so much, and it's also just a way more fun to play, in my opinion.
Sure. So what advice do you have for a brand new Legacy player? Someone who's just coming into the format, what's that one thing that they should focus on?
A lot of it is like, you should watch a lot of past Legacy coverages and learn what a lot of the cards do, because there's such a large card pool in Legacy. And to learn how to cast Brainstorm, which is very hard to do because the card is very complicated. But the best thing, one of the main things that's helped me is reading some of AJ Sautcher's old articles about just Brainstorm. And that'll help you a lot with Legacy.
That's awesome. I'm going to make notes of that. So learn how to cast Brainstorm. And it was AJ Sautcher, you said?
Yep.
He has some good articles on that. Excellent. Very excellent. So when you go to a tournament, what do you do like on tournament day? What tournament day tips do you have? Do you have anything that you do to keep your head clear, stay focused? Like, what tournament day tips do you have?
Normally, I try to bring like some bottles of water and like some beef jerky or nuts or something with me to snack on, because that just staying hydrated and not starving the whole time definitely going to help your mindset. And like between rounds, I just like hang with friends and have fun, just have a fun weekend.
Excellent. Very, very good. So, actually, I want to kind of go back to the Legacy because I thought of something else. So, especially in Legacy, for example, like you said, there is such a large card pool. You mentioned watching Legacy coverage and learning the interactions. Is there a deck or a style of decks that is, you know, better for beginners? Or what are your thoughts on that?
probably the best beginner legacy deck would be like to play like a burn deck or like even just like a some kind of linear combo deck like Dredge or something, just because it doesn't necessarily matter as much of what your opponent's doing to bother your game plan, but you'll also get to see what they're doing, which will help you be familiarized with the format. But it's not, it won't, like, you won't have to worry as much while you're actually playing to like for your strategy to work.
And what is one of the best decks in Legacy right now?
Still think the best deck in Legacy is Miracles, which it has been for a long time.
Okay. So what does that deck do?
It's pretty much the only real control deck in Legacy. And it uses the card Sensei's the Binding Top, which is a one mana artifact that you can pay one mana to look at the top three cards of your library and rearrange them in any order. And you can tap it to put it on top of your library and draw a card. So it uses that with Counterbalance, which is a two blue enchantment that you, whenever a player casts a spell, well, whenever an opponent casts a spell, you can reveal the top card of your library. And if it costs the same compared mana cost, you can counter that spell. So they'll, like, if your game goes long at all, which sometimes, because Legacy is so cheap and there's so many one mana cost spells, sometimes early as turn two, you can be locked out of the game by them setting up counterbalance and Sensei's Binding Top.
Very interesting. So what strategies or cards are good against that type of strategy? We just want to kind of understand. Yeah, we want to look at what's doing good, and then what are the strategies that kind of oppose that?
Some of the best strategies against like the counterbalance deck are the Eldrazi strategy is rather good against it because they have Cavern of Souls to make their creatures uncounterable, and they have just cards that are just larger in mana cost than a lot of the cards the Miracles deck plays. So that's good, and that's one of the reasons also that Sneak and Show I think is well positioned. Is because Show and Tell is a 3-mana spell, and they don't have a ton of 3-mana spells in their deck. And Sneak Attack's 4, and the only 4-mana spell they have is Jace and sometimes Moat.
Interesting. Okay. Very good. So just playing things that are bigger so they don't get countered is kind of one way to go to kind of address the Miracles strategy. Yeah, very good. Very good. Now, do you have any, you mentioned some already, which we'll link to, but what are your Magic-related resources that you turn to when you're trying to keep your finger on the pulse of things?
Just like I use Channel Fireball and Star City like daily to read almost every article that goes up on both those websites. You look at most of the articles on TCG Player. Pretty much any bigger website that has articles, I read almost all of them. And then I check like MTG Top 8, MTG Goldfish for all kinds of tournament results, finishes. And I look at like Moto results and stuff like that.
Awesome. Awesome. So you're very well plugged in and kind of keep your finger on the pulse and what's going on. And that's awesome. So all that information coming in, I mean, do you feel that it's really improved your play, or does it really come down to just repetitions of actually playing Magic, or is it kind of a combination of both that really helps you?
In my opinion, it's definitely a combination of both. Like, definitely playing Magic is going to help you with playing Magic, but if you just play Magic, you're not necessarily going to get better, because if you're playing Magic and like poorly, or you're not playing like, you can always get better playing Magic. Most of the time, you're not going to get better unless you're learning from people that are better than you. So, like, if you read articles on Star City and Tone Fireball, but from players that are much better than you, you're going to see from their mindset different things that you wouldn't have thought of, and it's going to make you better at playing the game.
And do you have, rather, how do you find people who are better than you that you can play with in the flesh, like physically?
Mainly just going to, like, the Star City Opens, going to Grand Prix, like, a day two of a Grand Prix is one of the best experiences you can have for playing wise, like, which is one of the good things about them making it where a six, like X and three day twos now is even though you can't top eight really, you're still getting to play on day two, which you're getting to play against some of the best players in that room.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And then just kind of being open and communicating and, you know, making connections and making friends, and you can continue those relationships after the Grand Prix. So now you have people that you can play with that are at that higher caliber as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool. Well, like, I really like how you made the point that, you know, learning from people, because we always hear about, you know, playing with people who are better than you, but then also learning from them. And one of the ways you can do that is by reading articles by people who are much better at Magic. And that's a great way that you can, you know, surround yourself with better players. And by consuming that content, you can, you know, level up your game. And then you want to go put it to practice, obviously, by actually playing Magic. And that's a very key part as well. So really cool. Absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. So once again, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Cody, you can do so online. He's on Twitter at Cody_Napier. And then you can also find him on Facebook as well. So Cody, as we pull into the home stretch here, what is one last parting piece of guidance that you have for us? Either something that you already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
Just mainly emphasizing to have fun while you're playing Magic. For a long time, I just focused on winning and wasn't really even having fun playing, and that hurt my gameplay a lot. And for well over a year, probably longer than that, I did terrible in tournaments because I was more focused about winning than just having fun. And if you have fun, you're going to do better. So I would emphasize on that.
Well, Cody, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious. Thank you, Cody, for coming on to the show. It was a pleasure having you. Of course, Prodigies, as always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/CodyNapier. Just look up his name and you'll be able to find him no problem. Before we close out, I do want to remind you, snapcarcer.com/Kickstarter is the sponsor of today's episode. And what Snapcarcer is a brand new, super cool Magic the Gathering app. The goal is for it to be an all-in-one app that has a Magic news feed, buying and selling features, local trading, but above all, a collection categorizing feature that is super fast and super accurate. I've been playing around with it myself. I love being able to scan my cards really fast and getting them into one spot. The open beta for Snapcarcer just launched yesterday, concurrently with their Kickstarter campaign. So again, snapcarcer.com/Kickstarter is where you can go check that out. Basically, Pierre Reichelson, who was episode 142 of the MTG Pro Tutor podcast, is leading a young team of Magic enthusiasts who are putting together this awesome new app. And while it's coming together nicely on the Android, they definitely want to further develop it for the iOS as well. Because obviously, you can't have an app without being on both platforms, right? So check out the Kickstarter. If you want to come in on the base level, be a founding user of this cool new app. The open beta is open where they're collecting all the images that they can. And of course, as Kickstarter goes, they have some sweet perks associated with the different levels of support. So snapcarcer.com/Kickstarter. Make sure you tell them Sean of the Gathering sent you. Thanks so much for joining me today in this great interview. We have a real treat coming up next episode. Someone from inside Wizards itself will be sharing some really fun behind-the-scenes insights that I know you're all going to enjoy. So stay tuned for that. Until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.